we do about 5 houses a year, and we realize that $200,000 per house and 5 houses a year, that's $1 million in change orders. We look at change orders like another project. Like it's a separate thing from the house. We collect the full cost of that change order, 100% of that change order, immediately. We collect it during construction, or we don't put it in. And we for sure do not put it in ever without being paid.
You're listening to Contract Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Eric Olson found a way to squeeze an extra $200,000 in profit out of work that he was already doing. His secret weapon, change orders. In today's episode, Eric is going to talk us through the exact strategy that he used to 4X his profits on all change orders. Why getting this wrong can leave you with angry customers, frustrated team members, and $0 in the bank. And how to get your team actually stoked about this to maximize profit at all levels of the organization. This is a super simple way to make more profit without adding new customers. So let's dive in. Mr. Eric, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Stoked to have you. We're going to talk change orders today. You went from making $50,000 a year on these things to $200,000 a year with a few simple fixes. And I'm very curious and stoked to get into how you did this. So just start with that. What happened? How did you do this?
So, to start, we're a custom home builder here in Austin, Texas, and we build some high-end luxury homes in Austin. And with that comes an assortment of change orders, as a lot of people on here know. And we've always done change orders, and it's just part of what we do. And we had a project, customer name not revealed, but it was a $4.2 million house, which was a great project for us. Really nice, high-end custom house. And that homeowner added $1.4 million in change orders during the 18-month, two-year cycle. And we did them as we always do and didn't really mark anything up and didn't know it. And then at the very end of it, we started going through the books and realized on that $1.4 million, we made $32,000 in profit, which is
not much.
not worth doing $1.4 million in change orders. And added 6 months to the production cycle of that. You know, a lot of stops and starts. And, oh, by the way, add this. And he wanted what he wanted. Like, the money wasn't the issue. It was, I want what I want. So we didn't know it till the end. We didn't manage it. And we realized, you know, $1.4 million in change orders is, I mean, in a lot of places, it maybe even in Austin, I mean, that's a whole house.
Yeah.
We built a whole separate house for this guy and made $30,000 on it. And, you know, at that point, the light bulbs went off and we decided, you know, hey, we've got to do something. We've got to make a change. This is ridiculous. Not only do we add 6 months to it, we basically didn't make any money. That house was the revelation. That's where we started going, okay, what could we do to better this process?
Yeah. Now, you did a talk on this at Winter Summit. And I think just listening to it and going over with some of the members that spoke with you afterwards, there was some simple little things I want to get into today around this, 'cause it wasn't like a massive, like big complex change that you did on this, but I think all of us listening could probably pick up a few pointers from today. And it's interesting. You do giant, you know, big projects. Even those who are listening are subcontractors or your painter, or your landscaper. All of us have change orders in the projects we do. And there's a way then think we can approach it, charge it, incentivize our team around it to make good margin on it versus having it be something that kind of holds us back and puts you in a situation where it sounds like, Eric, it barely even covered your overhead. Probably didn't even cover your overhead.
Yeah. And after expenses, as you look at that, I mean, between the, you know, renting the toilet or the silt fence or the insurance, I mean, all of it, we actually probably lost money on those. I mean, $32,000 was a gross profit number. So as we were, you know, had this revelation, you know, we started talking about it. I mean, like, you know, what can we do? Can we just, we'll just penalize people for doing change orders, right? That didn't
get
seem
rid of
to
them.
Go with, yeah, this, we'll never do a change order again. That not only is that just completely not capable in Austin, Texas anyway. If people are going to do what they want, they're inevitable. We're not going to stop change orders. So like, let's figure out a way to manage change orders. But we got to realize too, there's more than just a financial cost, man. There's construction delays. There's all these opportunity costs, admin costs that go into change orders that we were never accounting for. And we realized we were doing like 50 change orders per house.
Wow.
Which I don't know if that's a lot or a little, but it seemed like a lot. Feel like 50 different times during the project, we would, you know, hey, we need to do this or we need to do that. And on those, about $200,000 on the average, you know, so $1.4 million was definitely like that was an outlier. I mean, not everybody does $1 million in change orders, but on the average, we're doing 200,000 in change orders and making less than $50,000 a year on those, like, you know, 3%, 2%, 3%, 4%, whatever it was. But we do about 5 houses a year, and we realize that $200,000 per house and 5 houses a year, that's $1 million in change orders. And we decided, all right, what we're going to do is turn these into, you know, a money-making process. And we started marking your change orders up, which was a very easy thing. But the problem was, is that we're, you know, I'm not in the field every day. I've got project managers. And the project managers are close with our customers. You know, they love them. They get to be buddies with them. And the excuses of why we never charged enough, you know, they're so nice, or, you know, oh, I'll get it on the next one. I mean, you can imagine how many excuses there were to not charge our customer what we thought was proper.
Yeah, we talked about this in our prep call a bit too, but I'd imagine there's just a bit of an emotional component of like, hey, I'm loyal to this customer. I care about serving them well. I want them to be happy with the job. And this is a lot of money. So if I can save them a bit, you know, why wouldn't I, right? And so they're not thinking about the bigger business impact. They're just thinking about the relationship with the person that they go spend the next, whatever, 6 months, a year with. So
very much so. And we like that. We want them to. Our guys build about 2 at a time.
Yep.
So they do get this relationship with them. So it's, you know, super easy for me to sit in the high throne and, you know, cast my wishes down to them, you know, and, you know, oh, it was an easy change, or, you know, I forgot. I'll definitely do it the next time. You know, all those excuses. And it just kind of wasn't working, you know, so we were like, man, this is not working. And having lunch one day, we were sitting around and we said, what if we incentivized our project managers on the profitability of change orders?
Yeah.
And that was the bulb. And I'm telling you, it seems so simple. I mean, I don't know. Why didn't I think of it before? We rolled that out in 2025, and within days, I mean, it wasn't weeks or months by any means, within days, the next change orders that were coming through had, we were charging 35 to 45% markup, every one of them. Every one of them had had a markup on it. And we started incentivizing them and explaining to them that our customers are nice, but we don't give change order for free though either. And when they started getting incentivized financially on these, things changed to the point where we almost don't really have to manage it. It manages itself.
When we started the show, we had one simple goal, which was to be a part of helping professionalize this industry. But most importantly, I wanted to give all of you a bit of your life back as entrepreneurs. I never could have imagined we would have reached this many people. We've had our ups and downs, but man, we learned what truly brings value and how to bring the change that so many of us have been working towards. So my ask for you today is simple. It's to subscribe. It's the one free thing that you can do to help drive momentum in everything we've been working on. So if you get value from this show and you believe in what we set out to go do, I encourage you to subscribe and be a part of helping us reach the entire industry. Thank you. What was going on with the project managers? I mean, even for them, and maybe you've probably talked to them about this, but like, what were they seeing and feeling before? What did they see and feel now? What psychologically, like, what shifted for them?
I mean, psychologically, they all knew we should be making more profit on change orders.
Yeah.
Psychologically, though, they realize that really only benefits me.
Yeah.
You know, as the owner of the company. And, you know, human nature is great. Yeah. Our company made more money or whatever. There wasn't a lot there for them financially or any incentive actually, to charge or not do them or whatever. And as soon as we said, you guys get a piece of this profit, and some of them are substantial. I mean, I've kind of printed out some things I was looking at today before our call, where we're making $25,000 and $30,000 per house on some of these, but we've got some that are $90,000 in profit, mm-hmm. and our guys get 10%. So it's a $9,000 bonus.
Yeah,
just for doing your job. That's substantial. You build two of those in a row, and next thing you know, you're making, you know, well over 10 to up to $20,000 just in profit from change orders on our jobs.
And I can imagine before too, like they're not making anything off of it, but you weren't either, funny enough. And it also probably disrupted the schedule. Like
100%. Yeah. And that was the hard part is we are a fixed cost, fixed fee builder here in Austin. So I don't do it cost plus. So, you know, these jobs go 6 months over schedule. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the insurance still has to be extended. The rental toilet still has to be extended. All the fencing that goes around. I mean, all, you know, you can name all the things. And on top of it all, the opportunity cost of I've got another guy who wants to start a project, but it's across town and we can't do it while we're doing this one. And I can't start the next job. So there are a lot of pieces of that that came into play. And in this one change, and we didn't even know at the time that it was going to be kind of like, you know, it's not maybe life altering is probably not the right word, but business altering. This was it. And it was that financial incentive. And, you know, to a point, they started understanding the books side of it. You know, they all understand the nuts and bolts and how to put a wall system together, or, you know, plumbing or whatever, you know, all the things that we do. But this was more of like, hey, let's sit down and review the profitability of your job during construction and at the end of construction. And so the guys that are excited about learning more about the business, this was another kind of incentive for them to do it.
You turn their brains on. They're just like, this is actually personally going to benefit me. Let me understand the business mechanics behind this. Let me actually play this game with you.
Absolutely. And our goal is to, you know, try to treat them and teach them the way we do it. But I mean, their little business, we kind of say is your little home building business. You only have two homes or whatever it is, but you're in charge of everything. And that includes obviously the construction piece. That's number one, quality control and whatnot. But the financial side was always kind of missing. You know, that was done behind the curtain and behind the scenes in the office. And this has really allowed us to be more transparent with our team, of course, incentivize them, which is, you know, the number one thing why I think it worked. It definitely wasn't because I begged them or asked them over and over. That was not working. It was the money situation. But there are a lot of other pieces to it as well.
Okay. Let's get into some of the numbers of this because you're just mentioning them. But so essentially you would do a 35% markup on change orders specifically. Now, this is probably not the markup you would do when you book a project initially. What's the difference and why would you charge more on change orders? And how is that okay with the customer? And how did you manage that?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So, yeah, I mean, our margins are less than that. We're somewhere in that 16, 17, 18, 19 range. You know, a good project is a 20% margin, but most of the time, high teens. Change orders are a lot of work. I mean, that's the sentence that needs to be revealed. Change orders are a lot of work. We're not going to get rid of them, though, right? I mean, so we know that both of those things are true. And our customer, they deserve, you know, they deserve a simple and efficient process. They deserve upfront pricing. And so what we decided was they're a lot of work. We need to charge more for them. And we have a funny saying that we always say in the office, you know, somebody says, oh, wow, that's more expensive than I thought, or that's too expensive. Our first reaction is, yeah, that's a lot of money. Let's just move on. Let's not do it. Because if we can move in, you know, I mean, we're not in the, our goal is not to encourage change orders, but our goal is to manage them and manage them with profitability. So if someone says, oh, I think that's crazy, I'd never pay that. We just say, no, you're right. Let's go. Let's just move on. We'll keep building your house and make our margin that we normally do. Usually that diffuses that situation pretty quickly.
Right.
Because, you know, I think a lot of times people think that we're in the business of slowing their homes down. You know, people, I want you to go fast. Well, I mean, nobody wants it to be built faster than me. And so this de-incentivizes or kind of maybe deflates that whole, you know, oh, this is too expensive. We just say, no problem. Let's go. So we charge more for them because they're more work. And Yeah.
And I like how you keep it a little emotionless too. It's kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. what? Like, this is how we do change orders. They're a 35% markup. If you'd like to do them, absolutely can. If you don't, it's all good. We're not here to push it on you. And it's just as our process works. They are a lot of work to do. And so it's not, you're not trying to sell it. You're not trying to push it. It's just a part of the process. It's like when I go to Walmart, I can't negotiate on the price there. I know when I buy the things that I buy there versus I go to the flea market and I'm always looking for a deal. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. There is no haggling. There is no, it is a kind of take it or leave it approach, but we do give them all the information. You know, we'll say, hey, if this is a lot of times we have like a multi-step change order, right? You know, there's the we need a framer to come in and we need a new window that we're going to put in and we need new flashing on that. We've got 3 or 4 different subs. We'll line that out in the change order itself. So they'll have all the documentation, the verbiage, the pricing of each of those. And we also tell them, this is a piece of it. This will delay your project 5 days or 8 days or whatever it is. So they do get a lot of information at the beginning of this, and it's a fixed fee. There's rarely like an open-ended change order. We go get them bid out or at least estimate them really well in-house. But you're right. The haggling piece does not exist. And we just kind of say to people, you know, because I mean, building your home quick with fewer change orders is, I mean, that's kind of the goal.
Yeah.
This is managing all the ancillary pieces.
And I think it's important too, when you're managing a team or this, like, hey, we're charging this because this is the right number. We're going to talk about this in a second, why this actually is the right number for your company. But it's the customer often just wants what they want. Whereas your team sometimes is like, I would never spend that. It's like, well, you're also not our ideal customer, right? And correct. A lot of cases, these customers, AKA, like I get work done by our members all the time. It's like, I'm too busy to do a lot of this, but I want what I want. And so I'll pay what I have to pay to get it done. So,
yeah. Yeah. So we do, in our office, we kind of have another saying. You can tell we have a lot of sayings, but one of them is, and we say this a lot, is like, do not let our millionaire client make you feel guilty about us charging a proper fee for a change order they want.
And we will.
Yeah.
We're going to get a deal exactly if we can get right. it.
I mean, they are going to guilt you and this and that. I was like, they are building, you know, this guy, I'm building a $7 million house on a $7 million piece of property.
Right.
I'm 15 million in. Don't, if somebody wants to spend 7,000, 5,000 bucks on a change order, they'll do it. Don't let them make you feel guilty about them opening up their wallet to pay for something that is, you know, a fair price change order.
Yeah. Let's talk about the 35%, because there was some logic behind it, right? It wasn't just, let's charge as much as we can and push back on this. Like, you actually worked out the math of what you're going to pay out in bonuses, what you need to cover for, like, why 35%? Why was that the right number?
Yeah, right. So that 35% markup comes into about like a 28% or so margin. You know, markup and margin are different, and I'm sure you probably had a podcast about that. But we know that for sure. And so we wanted that to be, and I kind of looked at it as like, if I could get that to be 10% more than what we're making on our, you know, what we'd call our standard home, then that's good. That's where we want to be. So that 35% was kind of 10% more margin that we currently make on our homes, knowing that before any of that drops to the bottom line, my guy's getting a cut of that, right? He's getting 10% of that. So as you pull that out and you say, okay, you know, I'm looking at one here, we're going to have $35,000 in total profit. They're going to get $3,500 of that. And I have more to talk about that here in a minute. And it is a way, and I'll say this, we've increased two things since we've been at the summit. We've actually increased our margin up to 45%. But during the summit, and while I was giving that speech in the ballroom there in Cabo San Lucas, someone asked me a question. They said, what about the rest of your team?
Mm-hmm.
Like the office staff. And I go, what about them? And they go, do they get any of this? And I was like, no, they don't. And we kind of had a, you know, we call it kind of a coming to Jesus meeting afterwards with ourselves. And we're like, you know, maybe this needs to be spread about. And because the team does have a lot. I've got people in the office that help prepare these change orders, that enter them in the system. I've got one that helps prepare. I've got one that enters it into our system. I have one that collects the money. Three different people. So what we did is after the summit is we raised our margin on change orders, but I now include the rest of my team in the 10% profit sharing of these change orders. And I had people say, you know, that's really eroding your, you know, margin on these things. It is, there's no doubt. But the way we look at it at our company is it was virtually zero before. Mm. I mean, it was zero. Now, if I could charge 45, it turns into a 30 margin and we give out 10% of that in bonuses, I'm still making a 20% margin on these change orders, even after the bonus, where we were making 1 or 2% before. So, you know, what I want to make sure is clear to everyone, this isn't some silver bullet that, you know, solved all the world's problems, but it took us from 1 or 2% to 0% to at least 20.
Yeah.
Which is more than we're making on houses.
You create an alignment on the team. They get to play ball with you. Yeah. They get to benefit from the growth of the organization in a good organic way. And they can do their part to create that value and not feel like it's just all going to the owner, like you said earlier. So,
yeah, for sure. And we celebrated. One of the little things that was not expected is that when in our sales meeting, when we say, hey, look at, you know, we finished this job, it's 60 days afterwards and we made this much money on this project and change orders, I've got bonus checks, and you know, in front of everybody gets to see. Oh, wow, yeah, and it's all the same amount. Everybody makes the same dollar amount. No one gets more or less. But you know, you hand out checks for like $3,000, $4,000, and $5,000 to somebody who.
It's a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool feeling. And so in our world, it doesn't feel like it's coming off the bottom line so much as it's a reward, a profit sharing piece that. That everybody gets to celebrate in, and I quit making 1% net margins.
It's interesting. Something I always talk about too is like trying to get the team to come to the owner, not saying I need more money, but how can I bring more value? And in doing that, working together as a company, we can actually give you more money. We can bring more value to the organization and everybody wins. What's hard is when it's just like we're all dealing with inflation that seems to never end. And so our teams, we feel it. I'm sure you have it on your team too. It's like everybody feels it and has felt for the last 5 years. And it's like, you've just created an amazing solution to be like, hey, I don't need to just bleed out more to pay you to help you with the standard of living. We can all win in this together, which is probably the silver lining in all of this. It's like, it's great to make money for the company. It's even better to have everybody aligned and winning on this.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it is, you know, it's measurable. I mean, there's real dollars assigned to this. I mean, it's not like, oh, if you do your job well, we get a good survey. You know, it's more direct actionable items of like, hey, we're about to enter this change order and on the fly, and I was just going to wing it because I'm too busy to sit down and like do the real math and put the markup on it. I got a whole team now that says like, hold on, we're all in this together, creating this change. Don't start throwing stuff out there that isn't necessary. And let's make sure we have proper margin on these before we turn them out to the customer, because now everybody's involved.
Yeah, and there's probably people listening too who are just afraid to charge more in general, even just to their customer. It's a very emotional thing. I know a lot of owners that we bring in, one of the first thing I look at is you as a company just need to charge more. But it's like, no, but like that's not the expectation I've been setting, and that's how I booked so much work. And it's just like, guys, like at the end of the day, if you're going to go to produce work like you have, Eric, and it's not profitable, it actually is more costly than just no work at all and just figuring out a way to run the organization without stuffing it full of unprofitable jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your profitability, I mean, way we look at it is we've got our core values, and one of them is profitability with the purpose. And what it does, what it does for us, for sure, obviously the financial rewards are great, but what it allows us is that there's never an issue where we are not to the point of profitability where we have to say, we need to start compromising our quality. Mm. You know, hey, Mr. Customer, we're going to use less, you know, expensive, whatever, you know, to save money here or there. We don't have to do that because we know that we're profitable. And that's a real thing, Danny. I mean, like there's a psychological piece that goes to Joe saying, hey, I don't deserve to charge that much money, or I don't deserve it, or whatever it is. But I would argue that anybody that's in BTA, and I've been in a year and a half now, and they've got to know, you know, you and lots of people in the organization and coaches and you know, it's a intrinsic value. You know, we know that we're providing this really good value to our customers, and in turn, you deserve to get compensated for that. But it is a psychological thing that maybe it takes time or whatever it is, but we deserve it, and we surely deserve to get a profitable piece on change orders, knowing how much more work they are after the fact.
Yeah. Let's talk about collections. When we were prepping, you were talking about when you collect, like when do you collect these change orders? You know, why do you collect them, the time you collect them? Let's just talk about some of the logistics around doing this well.
Yeah, so that was a kind of a secondary piece that I didn't get into a lot in the presentation and at the summit, but I got as many questions about that as I did about the actual how we charge for them. So yeah, we've done it this way a long time, so we've got a really good process for entering a change order, getting approval for a change order, and even collecting money for a change order. We were bad at making money on change orders. But what we do is we have an online project management software, similar, Builder Trend was it forever. We've got a different one now. And that change order goes in. And of course, everyone knows how that works. And the customer can approve that online. They see if it adds time to the schedule or not and how much it costs, all those things. We collect, and this is in our contract, and we actually bring this up in our pre-construction meetings, we collect the full cost of that change order, 100% of that change order, immediately. And I say immediately, it's typically on the next draw. Within a week or so, I am sending that customer an invoice for that change order, and we collect it during construction, or we don't put it in. And we for sure do not put it in ever without being paid. So we'll try to collect them early and often, and we definitely do not want the scenario, and you hear about this, I'm sure you have, and coaches and all kinds of people, where somebody waited to the end, and they go, oh, by the way, Mr. Customer, you owe me $200,000. Your house is done, and they go, wait a second, that framing change order 18 months ago, yeah, that cost $5,000. I mean, if you think about it doing that way, I mean, not only is that a kind of a bad business model, because your customer might not have $200,000 to give you, but kind of a jerk thing to do to the customer. I mean, like, oh yeah, by the way, a year later, you owe me all this money. So we've kind of looked at it the opposite way of like setting that expectation up front is I'm going to tell you the cost and I'm going to collect it like pretty much immediately, within a week or two. You're going to know in real time with us if you're on budget.
On budget and on schedule too. You'd mentioned just something real quick, but just like, hey, this is how it impacts the schedule. You decide if you want to go out 7 days or not. And that's now not on us when we're 7 days past what you thought, because you made that decision and improved it and the money's been paid. So there's no like at the end of the project, there's no big emotion around it. It's like, we decided this 18 months ago, it was paid for, and we agreed on the schedule change. I can plan accordingly as a customer. Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's some people say, I don't want to charge all that money up front. It's like you're doing a disservice to your customer if you're not charging that money up front, because they don't know if they're over budget. They don't know if they've got money that they could go spend on appliances at the end, or, a bigger swimming pool, things that happen at the end of construction. They don't know if that money's available or if they're over or under. So like I said, we do it early and often is the rule in our office. And because it's in our contract, we write it in the contract, and I go over it pretty extensively in our pre-construction meeting with the customer. It's not a surprise. And we present it like that of this is a favor to you. You'll know in real time. And where we are.
What I've noticed too, after 10 years of doing this and working with a ton of contractors, area, but also like in every other trade, when you wait till the end to charge, this is the biggest area where you often aren't getting paid. And so when the product, especially what you said, when it's like 200 grand and they actually don't have the money, they're just like, I can't pay you. I'm not going to pay you. And this is where lawsuits happen. This is where people start to get into deep water. And it's beyond just like, hey, I didn't get paid for that job. It's actually what jeopardizes some businesses, because cash flow suddenly becomes super tight.
Yeah, so for sure. I would say, knock on wood, we've not ever been sued, but lawsuits, there's a quality of construction, defects lawsuits that I'm sure happen, but I'm members here, I'm sure, are building high quality homes, and that's pretty rare. But yeah, it's this, you didn't tell me, I don't have 200 grand and I'm moving in my house. Good luck. And what a horrible scenario that can be. And you don't want that to happen to you. The customer doesn't want it to happen to them. I mean, the only person that makes out in that is the lawyer that, you're going to hire and spend 50 grand to get 100 grand back.
So we've talked about change orders in general. We've talked about marking them up properly, incentivizing the team to make sure everybody shares and wins in that, collecting them early and often, making sure that it's profitable for the organization to do. It's also good for the cash flow, and the customer's expectation is, hey, I've paid for this, it's good. The other thing you mentioned is that you actually track them separately from the job themselves. Can you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So the software that we use, it will track the profitability of change orders separately from everything else that we do. So when we did this and then we created this presentation for the summit, we named it this and we still believe it. We look at change orders like another project. Mm-hmm. Like it's a separate thing from the house. We even bill that way. So as we do it in my books, I've got in our QuickBooks accounts, I've got a budget and cost codes for the house. And then I've got a budget when there's no budget, but I've got, actual cost and estimated customer payment costs, budget for change orders. And we do that separately and we do that on purpose. I mean, I want to know, we kind of have to manage this process. We've always done it that way. And that's how we knew we didn't make any money because we went and looked at it and we're like, oh God, this is horrible. So, we look at it as a separate, I mean, it's an add-on business. We in 2012, we started a pool company. We couldn't find a pool company in Austin that we just really trusted. That was an add-on business. I can build that while the house is going. And that's turned into a great, kind of side business, if you want to call it that. This change order thing is actually more profitable than that. And so I look at it and manage it almost like it's a separate LLC. It's not a separate LLC, but we look at that and say, we already have the project manager. We already have the house. We already have the client. We just have this add-on item and that needs to be separate. So we manage it as a different business. We bill it as a different business. So all of our draws are predetermined before we start construction for the house. You got $1 million house and at site prep, you owe me 5%. And at foundation, you owe me 10%. And it goes through. Those numbers are predetermined and they're all there. And we'll send those invoices as those benchmarks of construction come. Then you'll get a separate invoice from us for change orders.
Right.
And so you have two. And, that separates it. If you have a bank loan, the bank says, hey, I don't have any money for change orders. That's going to go to the customer, solely, and they're going to pay cash for those. And then the one goes to the bank or whatever. But yeah, we actually separate all the billing. We separate everything. Now, at the end, it rolls up into one number, right? And we get a total of what we made on the job. But I kind of have a house and a change order that are purposefully separate as the way we charge for them in our program and the way we account for them in our QuickBooks.
I see that this is a massive takeaway for anyone listening. So even if you are not a builder, what you are essentially talking about is measuring your profit centers and by revenue type and being able to really see where margin is made, where it's not made, and really getting away from the emotional side of it is like what logically makes sense. So I think in building, what you've just spoken to makes a ton of sense. I think there's also just people that do service work and they do install and they do interior and they do exterior and they do, and when you start to see it, it's like, oh, our interior work makes us 22%. Our exterior makes us 35%. This is like, say, painting as an example, or landscaping.
Yeah, right.
You start to see your profit centers and you're suddenly realizing, like, why do we brand ourselves this way? We don't even make money on this type of work. Oh, well, we've been doing it for 15 years this way.
And yeah, this is that's right. Yeah. Yeah. We've all, my granddad did it that way. So I'm going to do it that way.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Focus on what you do well. And we kind of look at it too as focusing on stuff that's low overhead, right? I already have a project manager to build my swimming pools. So that's a profit center with very little, zero additional overhead. This is the same thing, a whole different profit center with very little overhead versus saying, hey, I'm going to go buy a steel fabrication company. Now I need employees and a welding machine and a warehouse. And I've got to, I need $500,000 just to get this off the ground. This is the best, in my opinion, this is the best way a home builder, or really, like you said, any contractor, this is the easiest way to make additional money without starting a whole nother business and overhead and all these other things. And you deserve it. I mean, this is more work stopping construction and trying to figure out how to add 10 feet onto a master bedroom at the back of the house in the middle of construction. I mean, that's a lot of energy it's probably easier to see it when you aren't the one doing it all.
Right.
when it was just me and my business partner, and I would spend 8 hours preparing a bid, and you're just like, oh yeah, that's just part of, I just worked today. But when I see my team go out and spend 6 hours, and this guy spent 2 hours getting this bid, and that guy spent 2 hours getting that one, and you're like, oh wow, we didn't even really do anything today because we were just getting pricing for change orders. Right. So it's easier to see it from that perspective.
Let's talk a bit about scheduling, because I know this is also a big problem. It's like, hey, we've just added, well, you said in one instance added $1 million in change orders, but let's say a $200,000 change order. How do you manage the schedule, make sure that the next project isn't being bumped out too much, or if there is overlap, that there's expectations set there? Like, what, how's that dealt with in a good, productive way?
Yeah. So, so in our program, we literally can add the days to that change order. So you can say it is 5 days, and if the customer approves it, that schedule automatically moves itself out 5 days. So it kind of does it automatically internally as far as that piece. As far as where there's two kind of schedules I look at, I've got a customer facing schedule, and then I've got the real schedule, you know, the one that we use on the internal side. Those are different. We don't show our customers the day-to-day checkpoints. They get to see kind of bigger, broader benchmarks in our schedule. But to answer that question, we have enough crews where we don't really have much problem with overlap. You know, if I'm like, oh, I've got two electrician jobs going on at the same time, and we just added a whole bunch of electrical, which we do almost every project, we usually can handle that without much issue with the subcontractors. They've got enough crews usually. Framing can be a hard one. But the customer expectation, I find, is this was always the tough one for us. And we think we've solved it, or at least we've gotten better at it. Because we're moving the schedule immediately, or you know, we're collecting immediately, we thought, well, why aren't we moving this? You know, why are we not moving the schedule for a month? Like, we need to move that schedule in real time. And so that schedule is moved out in real time, and it literally has a block in the schedule now that says change order number 47 added 5 days, and the whole schedule just slides out 5 days. And so as the customer looks at it, they can see, oh, wow, yeah, I am 5 days behind schedule due to my, you know, whatever it is. And it kind of keeps it there. Actually, we have a ticker on the top that kind of keeps a running ticker of like you're 5 days behind schedule due to all these change orders. And it keeps it front in mind, because I'll say, from a practical standpoint, all home builders on this podcast can understand this. If a homeowner does a change order, and then a year later, the homeowner moves in and goes, I can't believe you guys are 2 months behind schedule. And you're like, well, hold on. A year ago, we moved this, you know, you added and you changed 14 different things in one weekend. And we had to stop construction, and they kind of almost forget about it, you know? And it's like, oh, you're just behind. You're that contractor that's late. And so we have accounted for that in a way where you could see it in big, bright red that you are now moving that schedule out due to something, you know, that they did. So we manage that pretty well. As far as the internal side, you know, most of the crews we have will have multiple crews. The only ones that sometimes it gets a little tough on is going to be framing. Yeah. You know, my framer doesn't have five different crews that run around. He's kind of he and his guys. That one can be tough. We have to say to customers, you know, we're going to bounce guys back around and move, you know, shuffle. And that's, we explain to people a lot of times, all of the shuffling, all these things that we do, and all the podcasts that we listen to, this is the reason we have a job. You know, call a plumber on Tuesday and he showed up on Tuesday and did all the work and left, you know, I mean, I wouldn't need a job, and you wouldn't need to have a company coaching people like me. You know, I mean, the reason we're all here is because that framer doesn't show up and that plumber doesn't show up. So, yeah, that's always a challenge. I'm not sure I've got the you know, silver bullet on that one.
That's okay. I'll poke you for what I can. What I pulled out of that is the big fix is like expectations on the front end of the customer, making it very clear and visual as to what caused this, and easily referenceable even a year later, so you can come back and point at it and they're like, right. Because otherwise it's just a wash amongst so many other things, and then it's just their opinion versus yours, right? Again, you've made it objective. The biggest thing, Eric, we've been talking about this whole time is everything is objective and everything is kind of emotionless. It's just, here's the facts. Here's where we go. Here's what it looks like next. And it's simple. But it's not trying to wheel and deal and get and convince. It's just, this is how we work. This is the process.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of looking at it. Is this is emotional enough as it is, the home building side of this, right? I mean, it is the biggest expense anyone's ever going to pay. You know, and so we look in Texas, this is part of our pre-construction services. So this is the largest expense most likely you're ever going to spend on something. This something is being built outside in the weather, you know, not in a factory. You get to watch it being built, which is, you know, completely ridiculous. No one would let you see your car being made, you know, and on top of it all, in Texas, at least, with maybe 50% of the workforce that doesn't even speak our native language.
Right.
Like, things are going to go wrong and
this will be fine. What could possibly go wrong?
And so, you know, the emotions run high. The higher that dollar, well, it doesn't even matter the dollar. $250,000 to $5 million, depending on who it is. It's all a lot of money. The emotions run high. So we try to, our goal is kind of, we're diffusing this. And this is a safe, you know, not emotionless, but this is a safe spot. We have predetermined things that you're going to know way ahead of time. And you don't have to worry about getting so emotional on this because you've got us, you know, backing you up.
There's a different podcast I ran on just leading teams around just the saying of like, clarity is kindness. I'm sure we've all heard that before, but it's just like, it's clear. And when things are clear, that's the simplest, kindest thing you could possibly do than try and be muddled and half baked and reactive and all those things.
Oh man, I couldn't agree more. It is really easy to make something muddled and confusing, mm-hmm. and another band-aid to solve it, and like you said, why in the world do we do it this way? Well, 14 band-aids later, this is what it ended up. It really takes some effort and some time, and we have thought through it. It takes some effort and time to try to make something simple.
Yeah.
And that is the truth from someone who's trying to make it. Our goal is to try to make this as simple as possible and tell people, you know, you're about to embark on this journey with us of $3-5 million and 100 selections you've got to make and all these different things. And they're just, you know, they go blank in their face sometimes. You're trying to make this where it's like, trust us, we have a process, and clarity in simplicity is our goal all the way through. Yeah, that's a big piece of this.
What would you say is some of the biggest like realizations or changes you've made? Just you've been with BTA for a little bit now. What are some of the big, simple, quick wins? We've talked about change orders, but overall, when you look at the business, what have you actually been doing with us for the last year that's made the biggest difference for you?
Yeah, that's great. A lot. We've been in business like 19 years, starting our 20th year, which is pretty rare. I'm gonna say, I don't know if it's rare, but I bet you don't get a lot of people that start with you 20 years, you know, into it, or 18 years into it. We knew we needed systems. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was it. I knew it as a business owner growing and getting bigger. And, you know, we're doing 10, 12, 15 million, 17 million a year. But we're doing it, because I'm at the office Monday through Sunday. I'm there every day,
right,
all the time. And we knew I couldn't keep doing that. It was just not feasible. I also knew that if I had another 10 years, I probably could figure it out. But, you know, that was not what I wanted to do. We found BTA. And so what we've done, a few things, but number one is financials. We didn't have any financial controls. We didn't have budget. We didn't have any of that before we started. We know our budgets inside and out. We know our income statements. We know our profitability per job per month. We are granular on our financials, and it took a little time to get that right, but that was huge. We do not wait to the end of the job to know if we're successful or not. We know it month by month by month, as we go, including these change orders. Those are monitored monthly. That's number one. The system part, though, is number two. We have systems now for just about everything. It's SOPs for everything. And you have to have those as you grow your team. We didn't have them. I just did them, you know, and they were, all the SOPs were in my head. Now we have more and more people. And so SOPs and systems have been probably our second thing that we have done. And then our third is how to hire. My gosh, because we need more people, we've actually been using a vendor that was referred to us through BTA. And it's been, you know, life-changing for me anyway, because if I'm now, instead of working 80 hours a week, I'm probably down to 50 cool. since I started yeah. with BTA. So I've saved 30 hours a week. And by the way, we're getting more done, and we're getting it done better. You know, I mean, I'm not managing our social media. I mean, I'm a 51-year-old finance major. Like, I don't need to be doing our social media. I have somebody doing that, and I have someone doing accounting, and so we really have, it's changed how we run our company in such a good way. And I think I don't know if it was you that was the running the podcast at the time, but, a guy named Dan Martell.
Yep. Yeah.
Wrote a book called, I think it was like Buy Back Your Time yep. or whatever it was. changed us. I mean, I read it and I reread it and I was like, oh my God, you don't hire people to grow your company. You hire people so that you can go grow your company and they can run all the things. And so I've learned a little pieces as we go, you know, Cameron, who spoke at the
Cameron Harold
at the summit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a great statement. I use this phrase now all the time. He's like, you know, it's like the public school system kind of like ruined us of saying like, oh, if you were bad at math, you know, what did we go do? You went and got a math tutor to try to be less bad at math. Instead of like, if you're really good at English, instead of just saying, hey, let's focus on English and be like, do what we do well and go run with that and hire people to do things that they do well that you do not as well. So we've been, you know, I kind of take these speakers and these books and different things that come across our plate and piece them into our job. You know, that's kind of an organic way, but yeah, man, it's changed how we run our whole operation.
Yeah. I mean, today was a cool example, like a simple understanding of, I need to charge out 35% markup on my change orders. And so then I can basically give a bonus out to my project managers and my team and see a better margin come in for our entire organization. Given all of that, there is background work that we didn't talk about the whole time, but you're bringing up now, which is, hey, we started to get to actually know our numbers so we could identify these types of opportunities and issues. We started to document the processes along the way so it's clear to our customer and to our team, and so there's no emotion around it. And then we started to bring in good people to kind of manage the process and get all of us aligned. It's people, process, and profitability. And it's the back end work sometimes doesn't always get talked about, but it's that 18 months that I think really led to this win. And I think we can share it now and everyone can use it. But I think everyone listening too, just know that it's more than just adding 35% to your change orders. It's thinking through the people, the process, and the profitability element of your organization, and then making those little dial tweaks to really optimize.
Yeah, yeah, you nail on the head. I mean, that is it. And I feel like we're getting better. You know, each week, month that we go by, you know, there's small incremental changes, but we are getting better. And you know, I'm in the pro group, so I kind of have like, I think of my pro group as like my board of directors almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know each other's financials. We know that they should, you know, oh gosh, I've got to get rid of this employee or I got to hire this one. And we meet, you know, 2 weeks later and you made the very first question is, have you done it yet?
Yeah.
and it comes right back to me too. I'm like, hey, you've been talking about this stuff for, you know, this, all this BS that's coming out of you, but like, are you really going to add some accountability? I think is pretty cool. It's a little scary at first until you realize kind of everybody, you know, is in the same boat. Nobody's got it, you know, completely figured out, but there's some really cool stuff with that accountability piece in there too. But yeah, people, process, profitability, man, that's it. And knowing, I mean, if anybody's listening to this, Matt Reisinger is a good buddy of mine. And he said the other day, he's like, if you feel like you come home from work and at 9 o'clock, you feel like you could go back to work and work 4 more hours, we gotta make some changes. Right. You gotta get people in there. And sometimes you don't want to hire until you get the volume or the revenue. But I argue that get somebody in there. So if you are the sales guy, like I am in my company, I don't have to create those financial reports anymore. I have somebody that does that. I go get to sell, which will generate more revenue, which will definitely pay for this new employee, you know, multi times over. And by doing this, I have reduced my workload by 20 to 30 hours per week.
That's amazing. And it's a good principle. It's like a lot of people would say, do we hire first and then get the work, or do we get the work mm-hmm. first and then hire? And you're setting yourself up for a little bit of a mess. You might feel safer about it, but if you go get the work and then hire reactively, because you got to still train, you got to develop, you got to make sure the right processes. A lot of times it's stuff that you've done yourself. So like, it's not well documented because you're the entrepreneur. You just did it your own harebrained way. And so I would encourage everyone listening to this, like just realize, take a little bit of risk in your organization. Realize that when you bring good people in, they can actually be a big part of driving the future growth of the organization. Even if they're not directly tied to revenue, it opens you up to be able to do the things you're supposed to go do. And Eric, today was a great example because it's not just selling more jobs and getting more leads. There are like 50 dials we can turn to optimize things. And this was a very simple, clear one today. So.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. And I hope it made sense to everybody.
I think it did. Any final thoughts? Any final like words of advice for everyone listening?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say the two things that we took away from this, and I keep preaching it to my team, and I'll say it here again, is the customer deserves that clear, you know, here's how much that change order is, and I'm going to collect it immediately. And we deserve to get paid. They're a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. believe it or not, we are worth what we do in this industry. And actually, if anything, we're largely undervalued, and we undervalue ourselves, and it's our own affliction. I think a lot of us need to kind of get over, you know, I know that everybody has a different ideal customer, but generally with most of the members I work with, I'm like, look, your customer is hiring you because they make more than what they're, you know, they're paying your team to go do this project. You're better equipped. You have more experience, and you bring the tools and years of background to be able to do this right once well. You can charge for that. And they will get tons of value from it. And you need to see the value that you bring, not just the cost that you're charging. So
that's right. That's couldn't have said it better myself.
Cool. Eric, thanks for your time on this. Everyone listening, go make some change order changes. And if you're not in home building, I hope you got something from this, because there's so much for all of us, whether you run a small service company or you do roofing or landscaping or painting or renovations, all of us could be billing properly and understand our profit centers and increase our margins and include our team in a lot of this so that there's more energy than just us dragging the ball ourselves. Okay.
Absolutely. Thanks, Danny.
Okay. Talk to you later, Eric. See you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.